On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we react to the massive news, the momentous decision by Commissioner Rob Manfred to reinstate Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson from the permanently ineligible list. What that means for Rose and his posthumous quest to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame and how that could possibly happen. We discuss that, of course. We react to the news that Paul Skeens will be pitching for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. Discuss a wild night in Major League Baseball on Tuesday. And of course, the Tigers won again. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that received fashion criticism from Jesse Winker yesterday. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And there I am in the Mets clubhouse wearing brown shoes and a black belt. And Jesse Winker said, you can't do that, and offered me a pair of shoes to wear so that I didn't break the fashion rules.
Wow. So he was just going to offer you one of his own pairs of shoes to just get you on the right track?
Yeah, to make sure I was matchy-matchy.
That's incredible and kind of awesome timing. I caught up with Jake Bowers in the Brewers clubhouse the other day, and he also commented on your fashion. And I'm not even joking. Jake Bowers was like, man, Jake's got, he's like, man, he's in New York. He's got those hipster outfits. I was like, sure. Yeah, totally. Wow. That is a real thing that happens. So Jake's fashion is probably not what you expected us to discuss on the beginning of this Wednesday edition of Baseball Barbacast. But since you brought it up, I figured I would follow up. I don't know how I'm supposed to transition from that to the momentous decision from Commissioner Manfred to reinstate Pete Rose and several others from the permanently ineligible list. But I'm
Pete
going
Rose,
to do,
you have
do
to
my
say,
best.
You,
yeah.
You have to say it right. Pete Rose
and several others.
And several, and folks, we're going to get to the several others, and I'm not just talking about Shoeless Joe Jackson. Jake, we have a lot to talk about on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, and we are going to begin with that news. Our opener today is Pete Rose and several others.
Okay, so Pete Rose, one of the most iconic and accomplished players of all time. Nobody has more hits. Nobody played more games, won more games. Nobody in the history of this lovely sport has stepped up to the plate more often than Pete Rose. He won 3 World Series, an MVP award, 3 batting titles, 17 All-Star games. He was a cultural icon, okay? When he retired as a player in 1986, he was a shoe-in, a lock, to one day be elected into the Hall of Fame. And then, in 1986, it came out that he had been gambling on baseball. MLB launched an investigation, and in August of that year, banned Pete Rose for life, pending applications for reinstatement, which is, I guess it's like life with the opportunity of parole.
But so that's Pete relevant Rose, for many reasons.
Relevant. So Pete Rose then gets put on the ineligible list, okay, permanently ineligible list. From 1989 until his death in 2024, Rose campaigns at various times to get off that list. He continues to gamble on baseball. He says a bunch of wild stuff. He's on the Fox baseball desk. And he passes away in 2024, having not gotten in to the Hall of Fame. So what happened yesterday? Okay, here's what happened yesterday. MLB carries a list of banned players. That list right now is players like Tucupita Marcano, who gambled on baseball last year and is permanently ineligible. John Coppolella, the former general manager of the Atlanta Braves, who did a bunch of amateur signing malfeasance and then lied to Rob Manfred's face about it. Henry Mejia, who was just tested positive for steroids so many times that he is permanently banned. I believe if you test positive three separate times, you're B4L. Players like that, those players are living. On that list of people also were Pete Rose and Joe Jackson and all these other people who had transgressed and threatened the integrity of the game and broken what I believe is called Rule 21. Is that what MLB calls it? What happened yesterday is that Commissioner Rob Manfred determined that when a player dies, when a person dies, they are no longer beholden to that list. They are removed from that list upon their passing. He said, quote, obviously a person no longer with us can represent a threat to the integrity of the game. I vehemently ideologically disagree with the sentiment that a dead person has no impact, but we will table that for now. Here's how this relates to the Hall of Fame. In 1991, I believe, the Hall of Fame passed a rule that any player on the permanently ineligible list would not be eligible to be voted into the Hall of Fame. It was known as the Pete Rose Rule. Joe Jackson, who was on that list, had been up for voting multiple times and was never voted in separately. Okay. But when that decision came down, it removed Rose from being allowed to be voted upon, right? Voters could not even determine whether he should be in or not. What Manfred's ruling yesterday does is it kind of separates those two things. It kicks the rock. It passes the buck. It takes this responsibility off of his plate and passes it to someone else to determine how Pete Rose's legacy should be chewed on, thought about, framed. That is what happened yesterday. I apologize for talking for too long and not making a single joke, because, you know, that's why people listen. But that is the what of it all.
Sure. Sure. And I think that we're going to get to what happens next, both as it relates to the Hall of Fame and just in general in terms of how we're going to talk about this, both from a process standpoint and from a how we think this could unfold and whether he will get in or not. But I also think that the timing of this is also worth reflecting on further. And that's something that you already wrote about. And I think that the decision here, well, I mean, let's be very clear. Pete Rose dying is the first reason why this was seriously being considered by Rob Manfred. Because something you referenced earlier, which was that he could apply for reinstatement, is something that had happened many, many, many times when he was alive. And at various intervals, for various reasons, often some flavor of the same reason, which is you are still not a person that is either A, expressing remorse about your original sin, that is why you got banned in the first place, or B, have continued to live a life or presented a kind of level of morals and principles and having cleaned up all the things that led to his original sin. Those combinations, plus just the way that he has acted publicly, the way that he has spoken publicly about his own transgressions beyond the gambling, which we can get to, all of that has led to Rob Manfred multiple times since he became commissioner say, nah, we are not reinstating you and giving you the opportunity for a path back to the Hall of Fame.
And Bud Selig. So Bud Selig, the previous commissioner, went to Rose and said, if you admit responsibility, culpability, and apologize and show contrition and change your behavior, we would love to have you back in. And that is what is, and Rose said no. He said, no, I will not admit fault and I will continue to gamble on sports and that's how I want to live my life. It was on the table and Rose said no. Baseball wanted Rose back. It did, right? One,
you could understand why.
It's a moneymaker and it tells the story of the game. Like, you want a player like that in the fold for a variety of reasons. And yet Rose, time after time during his life, could not take that last step.
Yeah.
And that step was kind of presented to him originally by Commissioner A. Bartlett Giamatti, who was the commissioner that banned Rose, the day that he banned him. I want to get the wording exactly right.
Yeah, because this is part of the story, right? And I think that, and I do want to have a quick aside here about... go ahead.
For a second. This is just what I wrote in my article at Yahoo. Rose's obstinance continued in spite of a declaration from Giamatti that, quote, the burden to show a redirected, reconfigured, rehabilitated life is entirely Pete Rose's. At no point did it seem like Rose wanted to follow that guidance, right? And then in 2015, and this is so interesting to me, in 2015, when Rose applies for reinstatement and Manfred denies him, Manfred writes in the decision, quote, in short, Mr. Rose has not presented credible evidence of a reconfigured life, either by an honest acceptance by him of his wrongdoing or by a rigorous, self-aware, and sustained program of avoidance of all the circumstances that led to his permanent ineligibility in 1989. I love that Rob Manfred needs an editor here. In short, here is a long run-on sentence, right? Yeah. Hilarious. But what this is saying is Pete Rose hasn't changed his life, has not said sorry, and has continued to gamble on baseball.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this is the other part of this that we sort of started to delve into when Pete Rose first passed away, right? Was, what does Pete Rose mean to us? Because we can understand why baseball and multiple generations of fans, I'm sure many of which listen to this podcast, right? We've already gotten emails from folks who Pete Rose means a lot to them and their parents, and they're like, because yeah, like I understand. I mean, my father-in-law is a lifelong Reds fan who obviously loves the Reds, like of course loves Pete Rose. And I haven't spoken to him explicitly about how he feels about this, but the point is you can understand that this is a player and an athlete that means a lot to a lot of people. We cannot feign that he means anything to us. We can recognize why he is an important part of baseball history for the good and the bad, but it is also why this is an issue that has continued to stay relevant even as Pete Rose has remained alive. But let's get back to why we are even talking about this, right? Why is this decision really being made? And this is unfortunately where we do have to drag politics into this to some degree, which is that our president, who surely has nothing else better to do, has been on some level of a public crusade of the many that he is involved in to you know, back Pete Rose and say he should be in because, you know, there's a lot of reasons you can imagine why President Trump would be like, yeah, this is someone that deserves to be celebrated. And a lot of people that support him feel the same way. Now, did this lead to pressure? Again, we've already talked about how the league, when we talked about with stuff involving Jackie Robinson Day and stuff involving the league wiping DEI-related initiatives from their website because of perhaps pressure from the administration. Like, this is something that clearly, as we know, because Rob Manfred met with President Trump at the White House
Let me just lay this out.
This is not irrelevant.
Yeah, not irrelevant. I think that, you know, the first word on the headline of the piece I wrote is Trump, right? And like, that is not something that I often write about, we often write about, right? And so I think it's important to explain, like, I really do believe the president is a vital character here, okay? Rose dies on September 30th, 2024. His daughter meets with Manfred on December 17th, files an official application for reinstatement on January 8th. On February 28th, Trump posts online a long screed about Pete Rose, saying that he should be in the Hall of Fame, that MLB should get off its lazy ass. I actually think this was a banger. This one line, baseball, which is dying all over the place, should get off its fat, lazy ass.
Trump's playing the hits. Yeah.
He's playing the hits. Dying all over the place is great. And that he would pardon Pete Rose. Now, Trump cannot simply just copy and paste Pete Rose into the Hall of Fame.
No.
As much as he may want to. And so then a month and a half after that post, Manfred goes to the White House to talk about, among other things, Pete Rose. A month after that, Pete Rose and 15 others, 16 others, are removed from the list, right? That is not a coincidence. Now, why does Trump care about Pete Rose? One, they are birds of a similar feather in a lot of ways, right? The loudmouth, rule-bending essence with how they operate and operated. But the other thing is, Rose endorsed Trump. Rose is vital in the cities of Cincinnati and Philadelphia. Both are swing states. During the campaigns in 2016 and 2020, Trump repeatedly would go to rallies in these states and be like, Pete Rose should be the Hall of Fame, you know?
And because Pete Rose means a lot to a lot of people, it's not an outrageous political move.
It's good politics, right? Now, why is MLB bowing down here? Well, one, he's the president and holds a lot of power. Any president holds a lot of power over sports leagues. And anytime there is a president, like, the leagues want to have a good relationship with that president, right? Like, I think that that is normal and understandable. Like, it behooves MLB to be on any president's good side. That is business. They're never going to be the person standing up and changing the world, in my opinion, whatever. It's a little different with Trump because he is a more volatile character, right? That will go places that other presidents have not gone. And two, because of the visa issue. So Cuba and Venezuela are, I don't know the exact wording, but they're not officially recognized by the United States to the point that, like, there is no open embassy or consulate for either country in the U.S. And so the players that come to from those countries have special visas that are issued by the U.S. government that allows them to kind of jump to the front of the line. Given Trump's, I think I wrote, punitive approach to immigration policy, you could imagine a world in which he gets mad at Rob Manfred and just rescinds visas for 20% of the league. Like, that feels not impossible. And so because of that power dynamic, whether that was spoken or unspoken in the meeting, I don't know, right? Maybe a reporter better than me will figure that out. But I think it created a power dynamic here that certainly played into Pete Rose getting off this list when he did.
Yeah, that said, I do think now is also a good time. I mean, those are all massively concerning issues for many reasons, so I don't want to just gloss over that. But I do want to kind of zoom back out and also talk about the timing and how this went about in terms of the presentation of this news.
Correct.
Because what we'll never be able to answer is, would Manfred have listened to Trump if Pete Rose were still alive? We don't know. We have no idea.
Would Manfred have done this if Trump didn't win the election? Right? Like, well, both of those things, I think, are interesting, but we have no idea,
right? Because what we had seen over the last 10 years is that Rob Manfred did not want to, you know, say yes to Pete Rose when Pete Rose was alive because he kept failing to, you know, express his all the things we just explained, right? So we have no idea. Right. There's no way to say that and trying to guess whether it would have was whatever. But again, the headline of this story was not Rob Manfred makes a decision about Pete Rose. It was directly and indirectly because the letter is directly to Pete Rose's lawyers. So Correct. Yes, it is obviously disingenuous to pretend like it is not relevant. However, it does not seem like an accident that they decided to make this a bigger thing beyond Pete Rose instead of just being like, here you go, Pete.
Go to the text. All right. Go right to the source. MLB.com headline on this issue. Decision on ineligibility status after death impacts Rose, others. This headline, I guarantee you, was run up the chain at MLB.com. Okay. It was discussed. Certainly. Go to the press release that was sent out. Go to the words said by the commissioner. They are framing this Rose decision within a larger bucket, within a larger decision, and saying, oh, well, you know, we did X, So Rose is just a part of that.
Right. He basically is saying that the Rose's death and the discussion since then has opened up the consideration for reinstating all of these other deceased players on the permanently ineligible list, which, you know, maybe that is a totally valid sequence of events to go about reconsidering Shoeless Joe Jackson and all these other people that we can talk about. That's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that's completely unreasonable, but in terms of how it's being presented, I don't think it's an accident that MLB is going not out of its way, but kind of finding a way to not go full on and say, hooray, Pete Rose is back. You know, like there is a recognition that it is more about the eligibility and the fact that these players who are people who are no longer alive, some of which for decades, that it is about that decision. It is a change in policy that is brought about by this, not just about, oh, hooray, yes, Pete Rose, we are ready to celebrate you.
And if you remove Pete Rose from it, which you cannot do, I don't hate this decision. Like, the idea that MLB itself should be adjudicating the Hall of Fame, like, Manfred clearly does not want to have that responsibility, right? Clearly.
No. Like, and this is the ultimate, like, all right, I'm really now not my problem. Because that was the only thing that was the only vehicle through which he was blocking anybody from getting it.
Correct.
Getting it.
And so the idea that he is removing that barrier, I don't think that that is like this horrible thing, really. Like, I think then the conversation is people who die, their crimes, how do we talk about them, their transgressions? How do we talk about them once they die? Like, I understand why Manfred doesn't want to have that responsibility and wants to uncouple these two things. I think if Manfred could have it his way, what he really would have done is not remove these people from the list. He would have just had the Hall of Fame change its wording about who's eligible to be in, right? Like,
but I think that would have happened by now. I mean, there's no reason.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that is the purpose of this, right?
Sure.
That is the purpose of this. So I think that, looked at it in a vacuum, like, isn't the end of the world.
Sure. But also, as we mentioned, like, regardless of how MLB chooses to present it, we know this is about Pete Rose. We know that is how this began. We know that it's why this letter from Manfred is to his lawyers and the people that have been petitioning for it. And then it just opens up the bigger conversation, and we'll take a break in a little bit here and then come back and talk about what is going to happen next. But if we are going to open this up and say, okay, why are we uncomfortable with it? Jake and Jordan, who have no emotional tie to Pete Rose, is, you know, the same reason why, if we just bring this to the Hall of Fame discussion, which is what kinds of people should we be celebrating, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about. And there are obviously other people in the Hall of Fame that have done terrible things. And this is a conversation that comes up, that came up for years when we talked about steroid users. It will continue to come up in various versions, and people feel differently about all these things for all kinds of different reasons. Now, Pete Rose in particular, because of how he continued to act late in his life and the degree to which, as we mentioned, he just continued to push aside all of his issues, which in ways that were repeatedly gross, right? And again, we're not talking about just the gambling, which he of course continued to do in aggressive manners in ways that are concerning. But we're talking about statutory rape, you know, allegations, not just allegations, right? Like, these are things that are very serious. He spent time in prison for tax evasion. Like, this is someone, someone who has since just brushed those off and said, sorry, like, I'm Pete Rose, what are you going to do? And he's been able to get away with that. He's been able to get away with that because of how many people he's still this important athlete.
This was in the ESPN article by Don Van Natta, which, I mean, it's just outstanding reporting, that Rose was on a track to getting into the Hall of Fame before he died. Like, there was some momentum there.
Or getting reinstated. Let's make sure we get the wording
right.
Thank
you. Yep. Getting reinstated. And then he was at Citizens Bank Park in 2022 to be honored as part of a Phillies World Championship team, the 1980 team, and asked by a reporter if, you know, his involvement in the celebration, what it said a negative message to women about, like, related to the allegations. He said, quote, "No, I'm not here to talk about that. Sorry about that. It was 55 years ago, babe." That, just that language, it's just dismissive, and it doesn't, it's sexist, and it doesn't, like, that does not seem like a person who is sorry. And I think,
and
I want to,
that was years after. It's a time, correct, and time and time and time again, over and over and over and over. Dude. MLB was like, here, we would love to have, and he's like, no, I'm just going to keep screwing this up.
We live in a society that wants to forgive and redeem too much, in my opinion. Right. Too much.
Yeah.
We live in a society that wants to dole out redemption all the dang time. And that Pete Rose was so comprehensively unworthy of that redemption during his life by multiple commissioners of baseball tells the story for me. This is not a person who was ever sorry, who ever admitted responsibility or fault. And even in death, that needs to be a part of the telling of his story.
Sure.
Full stop. Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will talk about what happens now. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. So, Pete Rose, eligible, permanently eligible.
Presumably, I'm not sure what would have to happen for him to end up back on the banned list. But now that he is off this list, we get this statement from the chairwoman of the board, Jane Forbes Clark, of the Baseball Hall of Fame, who has, of course, been in charge of the Hall of Fame in some form for decades. She releases this statement. The National Baseball Hall of Fame has always maintained that anyone removed from baseball's permanently ineligible list will become eligible for Hall of Fame consideration. Major League Baseball's decision to remove deceased individuals from the permanently eligible list will allow for the Hall of Fame candidacy of such individuals to now be considered. The Historical Overview Committee will develop the ballot of eight names for the Classic Baseball Era Committee, which evaluates candidates who made their greatest impact on the game prior to 1980, a.k.a. Pete Rose, to vote on when it meets next in December 2027. So that is a detail that, of course, was included in all the initial reporting. And it's like, oh, okay, so it was like, yeah, he can't get until 20. It's like, oh, well, what? Why? Well, what is, what, how does this work? Because
these are the rules. There are rules, baby. Pete Rose didn't care about him, but
there are still
rules
that Pete Rose, even posthumously, will be subjected to. And that is just a process of the Hall of Fame for how players in these situations can get in. This includes Shoeless Joe Jackson as well. The reason that we are not going to have this conversation in earnest until 2027 is because the way that these veterans committees or eras committees are working. And I'm going to write kind of a breakdown about this at Yahoo today, so you can kind of read the specifics, but I'll try to break it down simply. The first thing to know is, because it has been so long since Pete Rose has played, he's not just going to pop up on the writer's ballot. It's been more than 15 years. Right, 5 years after your career, and then the 10 years you technically have on the ballot, he's not going to just suddenly be on the ballot for all of our BBWAA friends to vote on.
It's not going to be like Cole Hamels,
right?
<P-Rose. laughs>
right. So, but there are still vehicles for players and key figures in the game to get into the Hall of Fame, and we have seen that in recent years for players like Fred McGriff. Fred McGriff is an example who was on the writer's ballot for 10 years and never quite got there. And then through on one of these committees that I will explain the differences between these committees a few years ago, he got in. More recently and more relevant to this conversation, we saw the induction of Dick Allen and Dave Parker. Now, that is important because that just happened and they were on the same ballot, the same committee up on the same, you know, voting Veterans Committee, as the one that Pete Rose will now be eligible for, which is players who made an impact most before 1980. And because that committee in specific only meets every 3 years,
correct,
that just happened, which means the next time the pre-1980 players will be considered on a Veterans Committee will not be until 2027. Before then, the two other committees, just for those wondering, are contemporary players, which is players after 1980, or contemporary non-players, which is managers, owners, executives, umpires, yeah. stuff like that. So there's a rotation of those three ballots. Just every baseball before 1980, yep. contemporary players, you know, after 1980 players, and then after 1980 non-players. And we just happen to be in the rotation where we just passed the one where Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson would be on.
Pete Rose could not have died at a less opportune time for him to Correct. Get in
like,
to the Hall of Fame.
I mean, think about it this way, right? Like, if he, again, these are weird hypotheticals, so I know this is a little strange to talk about.
But I'm just saying, like, if he died a year earlier this and this all happens I mean. A year earlier, he could have been eligible last year. I just want to explain the process.
Right, exactly. Okay, that's what I'm saying. We could have just been right into this consideration immediately. Now, that said, okay, so then how? But okay, on this committee. But then how does one actually get in on this committee?
There are 16
yes.
experts, yes. voters yes. on the committee. 12 of that 16 mm-hmm. need to vote yes.
Yes.
Last go round, mm-hmm. the 16 people were comprised of 6 Hall of Famers, mm-hmm. Paul Molitor, Eddie Murray, Tony Perez, Lee Smith, Ozzie Smith, Joe Torre, 5 executives, Sandy Alderson, Terry McGuirk, Royals icon Dayton Moore, Angels owner Artie Moreno, former Giants GM Brian Sabian, and then 5 what they call media and historians,
right?
Some assortment of 16 experts that represent that era of baseball will vote on Rose and others.
Yes.
15 others.
Yes. And well, to be clear, they also have to be put on the ballot first. There's another committee that decides whether he's actually on the ballot. Now, I would assume
Rose will be on the ballot.
That they will put him on there, and same with Shoeless Joe Jackson. Well, all these other guys, who knows? Now, that sampling, those names you just read, it will not necessarily be those same people. However,
it'll
some of them
people like that. It'll be people that like that.
And in some cases, like Ozzie Smith has been on these committees multiple times. So that just gives you a sense of the kinds of people, players, executive historians that will yeah. be voting. But again, that's a small number of people. And so when we talk about the likelihood of Pete Rose getting into the Hall of Fame, what we are talking about is the likelihood that those people, that genre of people, of players, of executives, believe that Pete Rose deserves to be celebrated. It's up to them. And that's a tiny number of human beings yeah. that will make that decision. And obviously, there are so many things that could impact whether those people view Pete Rose positively or negatively. So many.
Pete Rose could have just called one of these people a word at some point.
Or they could be Tony Perez, and they're like one of their most prominent teammates in their history. And I don't know how Tony Perez specifically feels about Pete Rose, but you can assume there's such a wide range of ways that these people can feel about it. But because it's such a small people, like, it will be fascinating. And we are not going to know who those 16 people are until much closer to December 2027. But that is the whole conversation that we're having. That is what we're talking about. It is not about the writers. It is very much now it's about a few writers and historians, but a very select few. Can, you know, Pete Rose get these 12 votes? And honestly, I don't know how to answer that.
I don't know. And this is the thing, because you say, oh, well, Tony Perez was his teammate. You know who else was his teammate? Johnny Bench. Johnny Bench has been public about not wanting Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
Right? It is so case dependent for these people.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, I don't think, I mean, I really don't know, but I think it is completely possible that he does not get in. Like,
that is
entirely possible.
And that is the thing, is this is not okay. Well, now he's in. Like, it is not that simple. Not only is it going to take several years, we just don't know. Also, there are other rules that they just added, which involve the fact that if you don't get a certain number of votes, kind of the same way with the writer's ballot, if you don't get 5 votes,
you're permanently ineligible.
Multiple times, you are, right, ironically, permanently ineligible from being on veterans committees again. This is relevant, by the way, for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, who were already on one of these ballots a few years ago, and I believe did not get to 5 votes. So I think they're still possible that they could be on it again, and we'll see. But this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a very select number of very important baseball people, players who and this is the thing. This is why it's so interesting, because we know that a good percentage of these people will have had personal interactions with Pete Rose. That I feel very confident in saying, because these are people, these are baseball lifers. These are Hall of Fame players, many of which who did compete against him or compete with him. So that is going to be a compelling element that we will not get to talk about directly until 2027. And maybe that's
okay,
a good
thing. So like, but here's an example. Yeah. Here's an example. 2004 article from the CBC in Canada. Paul Molitor,
shout out Canada,
who is on the previous committee, Hall of Famer. Paul Molitor isn't happy with Pete Rose's timing. The former Toronto Blue Jay expressed frustration with Rose's decision to release his autobiography the same week Molitor was named to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Quote, I'm a little bit disappointed. Does it take away from the current class? In my mind, I think it does a little bit. It was bad timing, said Dennis Eckersley, but that's Pete.
Because here's the thing. We're not, just because he's eligible now, and all these people love Pete Rose, and I'm sure there are former players that play with him that think, like, he has the most hits. Yes.
Sure.
He should be in the Hall of Fame. And that's very possible. That's why we're going to find out. And this is why Manfred's like, you know what? You go figure out Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Hall chairman Jane Forbes Clark was also disappointed that the book was released this week. Quote, I think the timing was very unfortunate, she said. It's unfortunate because this should be their day. Now, she's not on that committee. She is on the board. She's the president.
She's above all of it, but she doesn't vote. So
whatever.
She can't.
She doesn't vote. Yeah. But her opinion obviously holds a great deal of heft. I think that I am happy with how this will conclude, I think. And here's why. In the end, the game will decide, right? The game will decide. It will be definitive. There will be no let me off the list. When will he die? This conversation, which I personally am exhausted by, can be put to rest. The contemporaries of Rose, those who saw him, knew him, played with him, against him, covered him, hated him, loved him, knew about him, they will be the people to make that decision. Whatever that decision is, I don't think it will change the minds or the way that people personally choose to wrangle with the legacy of Pete Rose. If you ride or die for Pete Rose, him not getting into the Hall of Fame is not changing your mind. If you hate Pete Rose, understandably, and he gets in, you will probably still hate Pete Rose, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that is part of the issue that I have with the Hall of Fame process in general, is like, at the end of the day, what does this really mean? What does it really mean? And this is related to, I asked players yesterday at the Mets Pirates game, like, do you guys care? And they were like, no, we don't care at all. It doesn't have any modern standing. That being said, when we talk about telling the story of the sport, I think the way that Rose is talked about in the Hall of Fame on the plaque moving forward for generations, I think that is incredibly relevant.
That's true. And I will also say, like, the other part of this that we have not touched, and we have to cut it off somewhere because there's like actual baseball that I really am looking forward to talking about on this episode, especially with how much happened last night. But when you talk about, okay, well, is this relevant now? As people will point out, what about gambling and baseball? Like, this is clearly still an issue. We just had a Tucapita Marcano situation last year. Like, this is not going to slow down in the degree to which gambling is infiltrating our baseball watching experience. And those are all scary and big questions.
I don't
How
think
much
they're related.
Pete Rose has to do with that.
I don't think they're related at all. And
I think they're less related
that
than people are saying it is, but it's I don't want to pretend like that's not a conversation people are having.
I think the onrush of gambling has an impact on Rose and the way that people think about him and argue for him and him maybe getting off the list. I don't think this decision on Rose will have any impact on the amount of gambling that goes on around baseball by players. Zero, zilch. There is no player that is looking at the story of Rose on fan bet, touching like, oh, yeah, I'm pitching tonight. I'll, you know, bet against myself. Like, there's no way, because the deterrent here, and Manfred is right about this, the deterrent is enough. The earnings, this is not related, in my opinion, at all.
This is strictly an optics thing, which is kind of how things work. So sure. I am not, I of course I understand the point you're making. I just don't want to make it this far in and pretend like that's not a very common reaction among yes. people, even if it's a sentiment that I'm with you, I mostly disagree with. I just wanted to say that.
Last thing I'd like to say about Rose.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm going to quote directly from Giamatti here. It's a,
yeah,
it's not short, but I want to read it in full. Yeah. Bart Giamatti was nice with the pen. Okay.
Yeah.
The commissioner. He could spit. He had a way with words. And I think the idea why this all matters, I'm going to lean on him. So this is what Giamatti said in his statement in 1989. Quote, "I say this so that there may be no doubt about where I stand or why I stand there. I believe baseball is a beautiful and exciting game, loved by millions, I among them. And I believe baseball is an important, enduring American institution. It must assert and aspire to the highest principles of integrity, of professionalism, of performance, of fair play within its rules. It will come as no surprise that, like any institution comprised of human beings, this institution will not always fulfill its highest aspirations. I know of no earthly institution that does. But this one, because it is so much a part of our history as a people, and because it has such a purchase on our national soul, has an obligation to the people for whom it is played, to its fans and well-wishers, to strive for excellence in all things and to promote the highest ideals."
Damn. I guess we'll go to break. If you have thoughts about this, I imagine there's some people that have some feelings about this. I'm sure we missed some parts of this, but we did our best. And by the way, I do want to talk more about the other folks that were banned and now no longer banned. Shoeless Joe's part of that. There are some other interesting stories among these other individuals that I would love to get to.
Friday?
On Friday. We're going to do that on
Friday. Got to get down on Friday.
We're going to take a break. And when we return, we're going to talk about the baseball that has been played on the field recently that has been fun. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Tuesday was one of the better nights of regular season baseball that I can remember. It was something of a cleanse for me after, you know, thinking about Pete Rose all afternoon. I know, Jake, you did not watch as much of it, so I'll catch you up on it after we talk about some other big news that was fairly compelling that dropped yesterday and then was immediately overshadowed by all the stuff we spent the first 40 minutes of this podcast talking about. And that is that Paul Skenes, who you saw pitch the other night in Queens, Skenes in Queens, will be pitching for Team USA in the World Baseball Classic. We recently got the news that Aaron Judge has committed to play for Team USA for the first time. And now we get this pretty huge choice from Paul Skenes to pitch for Team USA. Now, this is not Paul Skenes' first time playing for Team USA. His experience in the USA baseball program actually stretches all the way back over a decade. He played on the 12U team. One of the more incredible things about USA baseball is they have these teams at all these different levels. They got 12U and 15U and 18U and collegiate national team and all these different teams. And if you, in their website, we've talked about this before, but their website is an incredible resource that has this history extremely well documented. And you can go back and look at the roster and the schedule and the stats for this 12U team of several future big leaguers, including Pete Crow-Armstrong and Mason Winn and Paul Skenes, who went to Mexico and lost this tournament to Nicaragua of all teams, which is pretty awesome. I have to imagine those, whoever was on that team is still telling their friends about beating Paul Skeens at a tournament in Mexico in 2014 when they were children. But all that is to say that Paul Skeens, who is also very famously known for being in the Air Force, was notably, or at least on track to be in the Air Force. He has spoken at length over the years since he has become a super famous baseball player that that is what he thought he was going to do. He thought he was going to fly planes in the military, and instead he turned out he was a generational pitching talent, and so he has decided to focus on that for his career for now. But he is also someone that recognizes that there are other ways to represent your country. And in this case, yeah, that is trying to beat Japan in the 2026 WBC.
So this is interesting for a number of reasons. The biggest issue for the U.S. team has been getting pitchers to commit. When you go back and you look at the roster of pitchers last year, last tournament, underwhelming, respectfully. No one on Paul Skeens' level as a starting pitcher was involved in that tournament. Part of that is the simple fact that the U.S. players care less. They care less. I was talking to somebody yesterday. I was talking to Jorge Castillo of ESPN, who's a buddy. He's Puerto Rican. And I was like, is everyone gonna play for Puerto Rico? He's like, everyone who is asked and can walk, will play. You know what I mean? And that is a sentiment that is held by a lot of other countries in the U.S. because it is this dominant force. There's a slightly different ethos about it, especially when it comes to starting pitching. That is to do with pitcher health and the timing and spring training and the buildup, whatever. Here's why that doesn't matter in regards to Paul Skeens. What are the Pirates going to do? Say no, Paul Skeens? You're not allowed to do this? Of course not. As far as Paul Skeens knows, the general manager of the Pirates might not be the general manager of the Pirates.
Well, but
when the
WBC happens
in the spring, like, he has so much control, deservedly, over his life because you don't think Paul Skeens is going to be ready? You know, the teams, when it comes to starting pitchers, either say no or heavily infer that they are saying no. And the Pirates could not, they were not in a position to do that with Skeens.
Yeah. And listen, unfortunately, a lot is going to happen between now and when they actually start this tournament. So, of course, we hope Skeens stays healthy. We hope that there's no reasons for there to be hiccups. And we hope that he's starting the biggest games for Team USA. And I believe that Paul Skeens is not going to back out unless something happens that makes it very obvious to him, not based on any sort of outside factors, that he is not going to pitch. But it does raise the question of, like, is this a trend? Because you mentioned, okay, Team USA cares less, but Judge committed to do it. And Judge, when we talked about it with Judge, you know, he was still fresh off of signing this big contract. He felt his obligation to the Yankees. All these different players have different incentives within their careers to participate. Now, obviously, as you mentioned, for a lot of other countries, these guys are not thinking about anything other than winning the WBC because they care about it that much. And that's awesome. And that is what we want this tournament to become, where it is that big of a deal to where they care that much about it. I also recognize that there are fans of teams that don't care. And so they're like, no, don't go to this tournament. All I want is for you to come play for my team and don't get hurt. Like, I need you for 162 plus. Like, and I both understand and am frustrated with that perspective, but whatever. I can understand a lot of different angles of this. But the point is Skeens committing is a huge win. And obviously also how fortunate for Team USA that they have this player with this background of military service, of like someone who not only just wants to say, oh, you know, competing with Team USA across, it's like, yes, like we don't need to delve into the military complex of this country, but like, this is not an accident that this is a person that is very passionate about competing for his country. Right. And the fact that he is also maybe the best American pitcher, or at least on the short list, is not an accident and very convenient and an awesome confluence of events that now we get to have him compete. Now, that said, I mentioned that because that is a reflection of Paul Skeens and his unique story. Does this suddenly mean that Tarek Skubal, that Zach Wheeler,
so this is
that
the
Logan
thing.
Webb,
this is the
that
thing.
Spencer Strider are actually going to be more likely to do it? I don't know. I would like to say I hope so, but I have no idea. All of these players are going to view this differently, regardless of what country they're from. If you're Tarek Skubal, you might view it the same way as Skeens and say, what are you going to tell me, no, Tigers? Or you're Tarek Skubal and you said, I can't risk it because I'm this close to free agency and I'm about to cash in. So there's so many different ways that players are going to view this. It's going to be a personal decision across the way. It's easy to be like, oh, if Judge and Skeens are playing, everybody's going to play. I don't think it's that simple, but we will see.
I think it helps. It gives Mark DeRosa, the manager, these two big tent poles of like, here's our best hitter as a country, and here's our second or third best pitcher, Zach Wheeler, Tarek Skubal, whatever. Like, I think that is important because now there's a sentiment, oh, well, if those guys are doing it, I'll do it too. I think Skubal's different because he does hit free agency after the season. But when you talk about like, okay, Judge not wanting to do it after signing that big contract, you know who was on the team in 2023 after signing a massive contract in a new place? Xander Bogaerts, right? Like immediately. Oh, yeah, playing. Thanks. Hi, San Diego.
And listen, there's a difference between position players and pitchers. That cannot be ignored from a risk standpoint. But again, at the same time, you still see other countries where the best pitchers are showing up because they want to win. There's a lot of elements to this, right? Does you know, baseball in the Olympics in LA down the line, or is there are there players that know they want to compete in that and feel like that they maybe need to compete in this first to feel like there's so many different things that are going to impact it. And while I love that we are getting WBC chat this far in advance, it also just leaves so much room for things to change and happen over the course. So like trying to project these teams is kind of silly, but Skeens. And so like, I am curious, like who will be the second best pitcher to participate, or do we get Skubal and Wheeler and along those lines? But this is still obviously a good thing. We are excited about this. It is very cool. It will add to the Skeens lore and it's great. It's just awesome news. Yeah, right. That's the other thing, right? We've seen like Trout talk about like how cool it is to, you know, play for the team that's competing for a championship. You know, like he was very open about that last time. And I'm sure there are some other players who play on bad teams that will feel the same way. And while I don't think that is the number one reason that Paul Skeens wants to compete, I'm sure that will also motivate him in a very, very real way.
It's also a hilarious reminder just like how quick this has all happened for Skeens.
Oh, exactly.
So the 2023 WBC final, right, was March 21st. Mm-hmm. On March 24th.
Yeah, it wasn't even conference play.
He threw seven innings against Arkansas and got, you know, allowed
one run.
Okay,
that was
like
his first, I remember that start. That's like early in conference play. Like still, even at that point, it wasn't like that obvious that he was like a generation.
Right.
I mean,
it was like a good start.
It was looking different, but we weren't that sure. And that was, as you mentioned, 2 years ago. Oh my God, 2 years ago. And by the way, I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because that's the other point that I think is relevant to just like how we talk about the WBC moving forward and players wanting to do it is Skeens is like, I grew up watching this when it did matter.
Bingo.
The generation above, when they were watching it growing up, it was a tournament that nobody really understood or cared about. And now this is a generation where it's like, the WBC is extremely important, extremely relevant, extremely cool. Something I absolutely want to participate in because I watched it. I watched it. I remember it. It is something that, regardless of their level of military service or patriotism, it is an event that is just really cool. It's cool baseball. And so you will have, I think, this next generation of players that will understand what that means in a way that the older generation can much more easily dismiss it. So I think that that's really important.
All right. What's next before we leave?
All right. So again, like just an overwhelming amount of awesome stuff on Tuesday night. We had 5 walk-offs. We got the Cubs walking off. We got Tatis' first career walk-off home run, which was so strange. It felt like we've seen him hit 500 of those, but that was amazing. You know, Junior Caminero hits a go-ahead grand slam in Toronto. Jeff Hoffman's ERA is over 6 now. The A's kicked the crap out of the Dodgers. That was pretty fun. Jung-Hoo Lee homers on Korean Heritage Night. The hooligans were going nuts. That was just an absolute delight. We got Ellie De La Cruz hitting a game-tying homer, and then the Reds lose again in extras to the White Sox. Isak Paredes hits a walk-off homer after an Austin Fromber, Chris Bubich duel. Ronald Acuna Jr. is coming back. He played his first rehab game in the Complex League. He homered in his first game. He's going to play in AAA later this week and will probably be in the Braves lineup like in the next, I don't know, 10 days. I mean, he clearly looks ready. The Yankees Mariners game was awesome. That went to extras. Max Fried, first game that he started that the Yankees have lost. Brian Wu is the real freaking deal. He is awesome. But the one thing that happened last night I do want to dig into here is Javier Baez. The Tigers, they won again.
Tigers won again.
Destroyed the Red Sox on Monday. But this game on Tuesday was a lot more back and forth. One of the best games of the season. And the Red Sox had some big moments. It was like, all right, we got this. We got another Bregman homer. Bregman's getting booed in Detroit because he didn't sign there. That was compelling. Just quickly,
bad business, Detroit. That's bad business.
I agree.
My guy has an opt out. My guy has an opt out after the year that he's probably going to take. You were the team most willing to commit long term.
It's not like this season is going to make Scott Harris want Alex Bregman any less, you know?
Okay.
Like,
and
just be careful here.
You know why Alex Bregman wears number 2? It's not because of Derek Jeter. It's because he was the second pick in the draft. Okay. I understand you're peeved.
Yeah. Hey, and
very short sighted.
Also, what do you need Alex Bregman for? You're the best team in the American League. Who
Tigers
cares?
Won again.
Tigers won again. Anyway, so we got Bregman homer. We got a big David Hamilton home run. And then it goes to extras. And Christian Campbell hits a mind-blowing home run to the opposite field. That is, which just was aesthetically just still hard to like comprehend. And that felt like a vintage. Well, he just showed up. Vintage for a rookie. Amazing Christian Campbell moment. And then the Red Sox bullpen, which just cannot stop blowing leads. Greg Weissert goes back out for, I guess, another inning and allows a walk-off home run to Javier Baez, his second three-run homer of the game.
Hell
Javier
yeah.
Baez is on one right now. He is the Tigers center fielder. He is their nine hitter. Like, it's not like he's moved up in the lineup. And as we record this, he is hitting 319, 357, 513. He has already been worth 2 baseball reference war. For a player who has been one of the worst players in baseball over the last few years, has dealt with injuries, has become a punching bag, a laughing stock, this is the coolest thing ever. Now, will it continue? I don't really care because what he's already given us is so cool. It almost makes it better that he has in some ways it's like good, like he's being rewarded, like him having a 400 BABIP is just like, here, the baseball gods are smiling upon you, Javi Baez, because it's been so rough the last couple years. It's not like he's chasing any less, folks. He's still swinging. I mean, slightly less. He's still operating the same way. But it's working, and he's already had so many big moments for this team. And the fact that he, by becoming an awesome center fielder, that you can't take away from him. That's one of the coolest storylines of the season and has changed the complexion of this Tigers roster. That is just fact, and that has helped them. Offensively, will it continue? I don't care. He's being rewarded one way or the other. He's being rewarded by bad pitch execution for Greg Weissert, and he's capitalizing, and it's one of the best stories of the season.
It's delightful. Baseball is better when Javi Baez is cooking. The most infuriating thing about him the last couple of years is that he wasn't changing anything, right? That it was just, we felt like we were watching the same slow motion video of like a, you know, person falling into a lake or something. It was like, no, don't do that. Don't swing at that. No. Right. And what is notable this year is that if you look at the bat speed, like swing metric stuff, he is swinging slower and shorter. So Savant Stack has measures some swing length, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
When you think about swing length, Giancarlo Stanton, biggest swing length, like Luis Arraez, shortest, right? Are you short to the baseball? That typically helps with contact. He is swinging slower and shorter. Is that purposeful? I don't know. It certainly seems to have made some sort of an impact.
Right. Because there's some metrics that again suggest that nothing has changed, but I'm glad you pointed that one out because, as I mentioned, like, yes, he's getting extremely lucky on balls in play, right? 400 BABIP is not normal, but he must be doing something slightly different because even if he's chasing 40% of the time and even if he's still not walking at all, he's making a little bit more contact and he's getting it, clearly getting way better results. And when you combine the raw skill and athleticism, which is clearly still present for someone who's still only 32 years old, you are getting a player that is making a real difference. And as part of the narrative of this Tigers team, where we didn't know if there, we were in on the Tigers this year. We didn't know if there was a place for Javier Baez on this team. And for them to be this good and for him to be a big part of it is so cool. Yes, it has required some injuries to some other players. If Parker Meadows was just healthy and good, would this have ever happened? Would we have ever gotten to see this? I don't know, because clearly they were committed to playing Trey Sweeney. Like, would Baez be getting these opportunities? I don't know, but I don't care because this is what's happening. And it's not about, I don't want to come on here and be like, this will not hold up, because it doesn't matter. Like, it's, let's just appreciate what it is and what it's been. And that moment, that game last night was one of the great moments of, I mean, clearly the best moment of his Tigers career, right? I mean, he's that's not really saying much. And so just to think about how he can continue to impact this team is really special. And the Tigers are now, you know, they are what, 28-15, 16-5 at home. Red Sox, 4-11 in one run games is a tough look for a lot of reasons. And losing a game like that and having to face Tarek Skubal series finale coming off his 32 whiff performance or whatever it was last week is tough. So maybe you're listening to this and the Red Sox scored a million runs off of Skubal and all is well in Boston. But for now, the Red Sox can't get out of their own way. And the Tigers won again. Oh, my goodness.
Tigers won again.
So yeah. So we love that. There's other news. Roki Sasaki's on the IL. Let's talk about that on Friday because Clayton Kershaw's coming back on Saturday. I think we should have a conversation about just where the Dodgers are at for a lot of reasons. Last night was not pretty. There's plenty of stuff from this episode that we're going to kick to Friday. So I'm sure we'll have a jam-packed Good, Bad, Ugly and much else. But for now, we will cut here. Don't worry. We know Rich Hill signed with the Royals. That's very important. We will talk about that on Friday. But until then, we will stop it here. Thank you all for listening. Please email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. We appreciate your feedback, especially when we're talking about things, you know, very complicated stories of which we don't necessarily get to all the different perspectives. Let us know. We welcome the feedback and we appreciate your insight. So please email us. Thank you to TJ Brassel for producing. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for doing this podcast with me. And we will be back. We'll be back later this week. That's it. That's Baseball Barbecast. Goodbye.